Thank you so much. Thank you for your beautiful words of chizuk, Rabbi Weinberger, for your support, Mrs. Maurer, and your short but very sweet introduction, and of course, Benny and all the volunteers. This is just for, if the only reason the organization existed was to give that 11-year-old boy a voice so that he could teach us that important lesson, Dayenu, it's unbelievable insight. And I guess that's a good way to start, because the reality is that one of the most important things we could do for our children is to reach out to them and give them a voice. Because sometimes we assume that we know how they're doing. We assume that because they didn't seem to want to talk about it early on in the process, they continue to not want to talk about it. And we have to understand that we need to, on a regular basis, check in with them, listen to them, ask them how they're doing, respect their right to remain silent. Very often kids don't want to talk to us, but to somehow provide an atmosphere that allows for such a statement would be an incredible gift for your child. The research shows the more you give a child of divorce a voice, meaning that you ask him or her about what do they think? What do they think about this arrangement or that arrangement? How do they feel about this situation or that situation? The better they do, the better their self-concept is, and the less difficult the whole ongoing ordeal is. I want to focus on four general areas in the 40 minutes or so I was asked to speak before we have the questions. Number one is to bounce off of Rabbi Weinberger's Divrei Chizuk in terms of, I think, an incredibly important point. And the reason resilience and understanding the resilience is so important, if when we deal with our children, we focus on the threat, we're not going to do that well. If you shift from threat to challenge, okay, from gorol to yiyud, as Chazal tell us, okay, from feeling that it's sort of something we can't do anything about to a sense of destiny, and this is my nisayon, as we heard so beautifully, right away, psychologically, we do better. Here's what I mean. Let's just look at the statistics. The statistics are very simple. We all know that children of divorce are at greater risk for difficulties. We know that they may one day have a harder time, possibly in terms of their own marriage. It's common sense. But what people often fail to understand is an equally important reality, which is the majority of children of divorce do fine. About two-thirds actually do fine, given the right kind of support that we're going to talk about in the next 40 minutes or so. You know, we tend to focus on the kids with problems. It's true. There's about double the rate of problems. But do you know what that translates to? It means that in the general population, approximately 10% of people have certain kinds of emotional and behavior problem. And in children of divorce, it's about 20 to 25%. So 10 to 15% more. But what about the other 75%? They do fine. I could think of, as we heard from Rabbi Weinberger, many children of divorce, if not most, who go on not just to have average marriages. They so value shalom bias, and they work on it so much that, in fact, some of the best marriages I've seen. I have a family member, a sibling who was divorced. And her children have, Baruch Hashem, all married other children of divorce. Well, most of them did. One didn't. Actually, I was one that was married before the divorce. Their marriages are unbelievable. They're just not normally strong. They clearly show the way a nisayon was transformed to a nes. You know, Rabbeinu Yonah quotes the magnificent Medrash Tehillim that I'm sure many of you know. Ilu nafalti lo kamti, ilu yashavti b'choshech lo haya arli. If I never fell down, I never would have gotten up. If I never sat in the darkness, I never would have appreciated the light. And that's what we see. It's what I've seen in my personal life with my nieces and nephews, and it's what I've seen also in terms of countless clients over the years and countless examples over the years. So when guys in the Smicha program, where I teach, you know, pastoral psychology at YU, they often come to me about dating advice, and they'll say, oh, somebody's trying to set me up with a wonderful woman, but her parents are divorced. Should I be worried? And the answer I give him, and I don't know if this is right, but it's the answer I give him is I say, here's what I think you need to do. I say, on the contrary, grab it, because this person may make an unbelievable spouse, may have a better chance of being an unbelievable spouse. But what we have to do is talk to her about it, and I tell this to the women also in terms of the boy who might be a child of divorce. Find out what kind of self-awareness do they have about it. If they say, oh, the divorce had no impact on me whatsoever, it's fine, it happened a long time ago, I don't remember it, it doesn't mean anything to me, then I say, you probably should run for the hills. If, though, they say, hey, listen, this was the defining event of my life, and I've done a lot of thinking about the kind of home I want to have, the kind of Shabbos table I want to have, the kind of shalom bias I want to have, and how I'm going to handle conflict, it makes all the difference in the world. So, in fact, again, the research, I guess, and I don't want to spend all the time on this. I could easily get carried away. It boils down to the following. It boils down to children of divorce, the ones who are in the resilient majority, what they feed off of in terms of engines of growth is valuing shalom bias, is instead of having their childhoods robbed from them, they're not overburdened, they learn how to become agents of chesed. Hopefully their parents allow them to offer support because there's more stress and you need to give them an active role, but without overburdening them. You constantly have to see, how do I give them an active role in helping out, an active role even in supporting me, without robbing them of their childhood? Because the research shows you overburden a child, they don't do well. But you require that a child help out, those are the children who do best with stress. The children of the Depression of 1929, who were the bechor in the family, who had to drop out of school to support the family so that they could put their younger brothers and sisters through college and beyond, common sense would have said that they should not have had very successful lives because they never had much of an education. Turns out, as they were followed into adulthood, they did better than their younger siblings because being asked to pitch in and help actually had that palindrome of not new, of natan, when you give, you get back. So I'll just end this section with an obvious point. And that's, it's an important point. I'll put a Jewish spin on it. A well-known Tiferes Yisrael in Yavamos, maybe not so well-known. I say it's well-known because I know it, so it must be well-known. So in the Yavamos, the Tiferes Yisrael says the following. He says, embedded in the Hebrew word for marriage, the word nesuin, is the following lesson, is that the inevitable conflict that happens in marriage can either be a masa, a burden that weighs you down, or it could be a masa. A masa also means a song or a nevuah. It could have you fly or it could sink you. And I was thinking that same lesson is very much the lesson of children of divorce. They are a greater risk. They're a greater risk. But I'm going to talk to you for the rest of the talk about what the engine and the ingredients of resilience are and how do we transform that masa, the burden, into a song.